Welcome to the show. It is the MMA Podcast, 2:10, Saturday, September 2nd, 2017. It's been a couple weeks. A lot has gone down since our last podcast, but, I forgot to introduce him last time until we were a good 10 minutes into the show. I'm not going to make the same mistake this week. We got Sweet Pappy Jones on the line. Pat, what's going on, dude?
Awesome, Jake. We are just chilling. It is a fantastic Friday. First day of September. Man, starting the month off strong. We kind of had a lack of MMA action last month. Not a whole lot going on. Something, a little action in the minor leagues, but UFC getting right back into it. Looking forward to breaking that down with you and also picking up on some of the news stories we may have missed as of late.
Yeah, we got a lot going on in September. We got football starting, which is always fun. I've got a lot here in front of me. I don't know what to start off with. I guess we'll start off with the big news of Jon Jones in sort of, I don't want to say the shadow of Mayweather versus Conor, but you have this giant spectacle going on, and then I believe it was Tuesday night. Late Tuesday, it was about 8 or 9 p.m., and this news comes down the wire that Jon Jones, the guy who had come back from all of it, come back from the hit and run, come back from the coke test, come back from the steroid test at UFC 200, which had his main event fight with Daniel Cormier canceled, which we finally saw rescheduled at UFC, I guess it was 214 in Anaheim. And Jon Jones knocked out Cormier, seemed to kind of put his stake back in not just the 205-pound weight class, but in the pound-for-pound rankings. I believe Jon Jones shot back up to number one in almost every poll, from Fight Matrix to the UFC rankings, I believe. He was back on top of the sport. Maybe not, in marketability, because you have guys like Conor going off and fighting Floyd for $100 million, which we will talk about that fight in a little bit. But, you have Jon Jones, who it was inconceivable. That's just the one thing I think I share with everyone who I talked to when this news first came out, and you're first digesting this news, that Jon Jones, the guy who everyone thought he was saying all the right things. I guess he, should get an Oscar. He was believable when he said that he didn't want his legacy to be tarnished, and he really took offense to Daniel when he accused him of taking roids the first time, and all of a sudden I'll get into the specifics in a second, but Pat, I don't know if you had heard the news before I texted you, but it was. That was just the one I guess common thread. There's just no one could really believe it was. It seemed all so set in stone and positive that Jones was back on top of the sport, and now I don't know if he's staring at a 2-year suspension, a 4-year suspension, but he has effectively, no pun intended, pissed away the prime of his career. And as much as he's brought it on himself, I think it's still somewhat of a tragedy. I mean, just the talent there. He obviously seems to care about his place in the sport. I don't know if he was that sensible in taking whatever he took. If he took, this is all still to completely clear out. But it's hard to believe that after, I guess they've done their due diligence, that Jones is going to walk out of this clean. Pat, what was your first reaction when you heard about Jon Jones, who, just as quickly as he climbed back to the top of the sport, has now fallen.
My first reaction was pure disbelief. The first I had heard of it actually was when you had texted me, and I remember that was just, I couldn't believe it. As you had mentioned, the event had wrapped up, you know, quite handily a few weeks prior, and everybody was, you know, settling into John Jones's back, and then this test, allegedly, he tested positive for turbinol, I believe it is, allegedly has a short half-life, and everybody has come out, essentially from, I want to say it was the State Athletic Commission to, of course, John Jones and his representatives and teammates. I mean, everybody's just completely in disbelief. John Jones, he had tweeted out something kind of cryptically positive. Always good to be positive in any situation you're in. Certainly when the chips may seemingly be stacked against you, it really doesn't make any sense. The only thing that does make sense is that John Jones has popped before. So this is just a case of him popping again. Maybe everybody has really speculated, you know, is it cycles that are wrong? Because it's either his cycles were wrong somehow, or someone planted, or, you know, someone put it in a drink of his or something like that. I mean, you really have to get very deep down the rabbit hole. There was an article that came out recently. I want to say it was on bloodyelbow.com that was authored by a pharmaceutical representative or something to that effect, that basically stated a tainted supplement is just a very weak excuse. Any of these supplements are clearly marketed as such, that they have XYZ ingredient, and that you purchase them specifically for that intent, and that cross-contamination, among other brands, specifically with turbinol in it, is not going to happen. If it's in it, it's going to explicitly state it, and just the manufacturing standards that go into it. So it has to be either someone put something in his drink or jabbed him with a needle or something, or however it works, or he just knowingly took it and got caught. Occam's razor situation, he's already been busted for steroids before. Again, he has the due process. He's passed the blood test, which apparently this just came out very recently, that the post-fight blood test came up clean. But again, Jake, as you and I discussed earlier, you know, there are certain things that will come up in a blood test that won't in a urine, vice versa. Who knows what the specifics are? Really, they're apparently still waiting for the B sample to come back on this one. And as soon as it does, we'll have some more definitive answers. But truly still just a shocking situation. As you mentioned, you know, the number one, pound for pound, one of the fighters that they regard as one of the best to have ever walked into the octagon, for an incident like this to happen, I mean, really no one wishes that, for sure.
And his team is vehemently denying it. His teammate Frank Lester went so far as to insinuate that Jones' third failed test was the result of a setup. That cryptic text, tweet you were talking about, Pat, times like these remind me how blessed I truly am. So much to be grateful for. Tweeting this about a week after the news of his drug test coming out. His only tweet since he was reportedly crushed by the news. Dana White, here's a quote by him. "I'm hearing that this drug is out of your system in 2 days. That's what I'm hearing. I don't know enough about these things, but that's what I'm hearing. So that would make sense if Jones knowingly cheated. Plus, it's all about who's giving you advice. If he did do this, he didn't go out and just get this himself. Somebody gave it to him. I'm hearing the suspension would be 4 years. So, you know, a guy like Jones, I guess he's 29, 30. It wouldn't necessarily end his career, but, you know, he's going to be coming back. And he'd be, what, like 33, 34? The sport changes a lot in that amount of time. I don't know. This is a guy who should have been on top of the sport for a long time. And you know, I've been pretty open about the fact that Daniel Cormier is my favorite active fighter in the UFC. And I took no joy in this news at all. Because the truth of the matter is, DC still got his ass handed to him by Jones. Now it makes it an even murkier spot of, well, shit, should Cormier be able to sue Jones now? Because Jones gave him some pretty bad brain damage, it seemed like. He was down for a while. He obviously didn't have his wits about him afterwards. Getting cracked like that is not good for your brain's health at all. I assume that there probably wouldn't be a lawsuit, A, because Cormier doesn't seem like that kind of a litigious person, and B, the fact that, you know, there's so much commission and, you know, red tape behind it already that it would be difficult to sue for an injury, even if somebody did cheat. That aside, it's just, you know, it brings up so many question marks. And I think it may have been DC himself. If it wasn't him who said it, I apologize, but someone brought up the point that it's like, wow, the only fight you look like you stunk in was the OSP fight, and that's probably because that's the only fight you weren't on fucking the juice for. Which, you know, if it really turns out that he was on the juice for all of these fights, you know, you kind of look at a lot of historic fights almost with a different lens. Like, holy shit, did Alex Gustafson really almost beat a roided-up John Jones? Like, let's take another look at both of those DC fights. Even Chael, I think, commented on his own podcast. Like, yeah, the guy was freakishly strong, and it makes a lot of sense now. Just so many question marks on what all of us looked at as just this freak talent, and who was this guy who all of us were saying, everyone agreed that when we all were old, John Jones would be up there as the greatest of all time. And now that's not necessarily, I think, the case. And it's kind of makes you kind of look at the whole sport with a different kind of scope. Not to get too deep, but it's like, this was the guy who was supposed to define the sport in our generation. And this is his third failed drug test. He's about to, like, you know, miss 4 years if everything pans out. And, you know, you mentioned all of the things about the half-life and the blood tests and the urine tests. And I saw an interview with Jeff Nowitzki, who would seem to be knowledgeable on all this stuff. And he said that for USADA to come out with this information that he failed, they wouldn't have done so just with, like, an A sample that could go one way or the other. They'll typically, I think, test the B and do their due diligence before coming out with major news, like there is a potential doping violation under the name of John Jones. Just, I hate to see it. You know, whether you love Jones or hate Jones, it sucks. This sucks. But all in all, you know, I'm glad we're seeing this crackdown. I'm glad that cheaters aren't, you know, allowed to cheat. But, man, this whole thing stinks. Any last words you want to put on it before we, briefly talk about Conor Floyd? I don't want to touch on that for too long either. I think the whole world got enough coverage of that fucking fight to last us three lifetimes. But yeah, thoughts on Jones before we move on?
Yeah, well, like you said, the damage to the legacy, it just kind of puts the entire, let's say, 2001 to 2016 really into highlight. Is that the steroid era? You know, MLB had it. Was this the UFC's era? You have, you know, especially if this pans out and this is John Jones' second failed test for performance-enhancing drugs, you know, also you have to look at Anderson the Spider Silva. He himself had a failed test, blamed it on, you know, what was it, the blue pill or something like that. It's, you really look back at all these different legacies and say, man, you see these marks on there, even friggin' Lyoto Machida popped hot. And you have to go back and look and say, man, who was doing it clean? Who really did it the best? It's just unfortunate, especially when, you know, there's a little more on the line than just a game of baseball or something like that, or, you know, a game of basketball or something to that extent. This is a physical contact sport where it's the wins and loss records means a whole lot more personally, especially if you're getting beat up in a cage.
Well said. Yeah. It's completely different. You know, you had Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa slapping, you know, balls that fans caught and sold on eBay for $1 million. These are guys punching each other in the face as hard as they can. Man, it'll be interesting how we look back on this historically. But let's move on very quickly. Mayweather McGregor. I guess it kind of took the most likely scenario. I think to get even odds on the rounds. I think it was around the 9th or 10th round. Vegas saw that. Vegas obviously made a lot of money with Floyd winning. You had a lot of people betting on the underdog of Conor McGregor, who went out there and the first three rounds. Say what you will, whether you thought Conor was doing a good job or whether you thought it was all Floyd allowing him to generate offense and tire himself out to put him out in the later rounds. Either way, it was a spectacle. I think it was fun. The boxing, you know, it was far from the most technical boxing you'll ever see. But you know what? Everyone knew it. Everyone knew that the press tour leading up to the fight would be more entertaining than the fight. And everyone with a brain knew that Floyd was going to put Conor away. And I think this was a really good lesson in just learning to not buy into the hype. And to use logic and to realize, like, as much as Dana White was going on ESPN and Skip Bayless was going on Fox Sports saying, this guy's special and whatever he wills, he does. And, you know, he's a unicorn, all of this. Like, Conor is a very special mixed martial artist who's going into boxing to not fight a scrub but fight the greatest of all time. I don't know. It was fun. I enjoyed it. I was actually at the presser in LA at the Staples Center. It was exactly what it sold itself to be, a spectacle. And let's move on. I'll let you get your 2 cents before we move on. But I think that's all I really have. We got what we expected, and There'll be a actually good boxing fight on GGG and Canelo, I think, later this month in September. That'll be fun. I might try and catch that. It won't sell near as much. It won't have near as much the spectacle value on it. But if Canelo wins that fight, that would be huge for him. It would be huge for either guy, Golovkin or Canelo. Yeah, what did you think of that that Maymax spectacle before we move on? I guess we only got a couple other topics before we finish this quickie episode. We got that Struve card going down in just a few hours.
Yeah, the Struve card. Can't wait for that to pop off. But as far as Mayweather-McGregor, that was entertaining, sure. I will give them that. It was scripted very well. I honestly, if Ramses were here, he would say this was a work. These guys, they had a gentleman's agreement. There were hundreds of millions of dollars on the line. This thing, there were negotiations. You see Dana White at the post-fight press conference talking about, oh, these guys were so great to work with. They're so, it wasn't Pacquiao side, you know, with the Mayweather-Pacquiao. These guys are so easy to work with. Because you got together and said, hey, listen, let's sell this farce of a fight. It'll be an exhibition, and pardon me, Mayweather will get to say he's 50-0, and Conor McGregor, he's going to get a gigantic payday. We'll give him the first couple rounds, make him look good, make him look like he's hanging with the GOAT. Then, of course, you know, later on in the fight, Mayweather will do what he does best. Honestly, that fight, if that were a real fight, that probably would have been over in the first minute. Either way that it went, I mean, who knows if that were an actual fight, whether Conor McGregor would have had a chance or whether Mayweather would have. I don't think – again, this was an exhibition. Don't know how they're calling it 50-0. This was an exhibition fight against a guy who had never boxed. The fight was called when Conor McGregor hadn't even been dropped one time in the fight. They're saying he was out on his feet. He was rocked. I wouldn't go so far as to say he was out on his feet. He was probably a little dazed for sure. But he hadn't even been dropped in the fight, and they wave it off in the 10th round. Whole thing was a cash grab. Cash grab successfully executed, I'm sure. Good for them. They did not get my pay-per-view dollars, but it was entertaining. They made it look fairly close, and I'm sure to a good amount of casual observers, it may have looked like an actual unscripted fight. But that thing, that was round by round, I feel.
In the words of Ramses, the fight was a work of evil. Speaking of Ramses, I'm glad I thought of that. Ramses, we did check out with him. He does live in the Houston area. He is doing all right. His family is doing all right. And I do implore you, you know, there's a ton of people who need help, need assistance over in Houston. I'm not going to tell you what charity to donate to, but just Google it. Find a good one. Find one where the people don't skim a bunch of fucking cash off of the top. I'm not going to say where to, where not to, because if you have half a brain, you should be able to figure that shit out on Google. So I expect our genius listeners to figure that shit out. Go on Google, find a good charity. If you can only give a buck, just give a buck. If you can't give anything, then do not give them a dime. If you really cannot spare anything, then it's hard times. Don't give them a penny because you need that cash. Put food on the table for yourself, for the love of God. But if you can give a buck, if you could spare as much as 10 bucks... that would be awesome. If you're listening and you own like a jet and you can give like $1,000, give $1,000. That would be dope. But for the common man, for the working man, throw them $10. Every little bit helps. And, you know, this is, I guess, going to be one of the worst natural disasters like ever in America. Like, it rained like over 5 feet, which I guess for the Houston area historically is like a 1-in-a-million-year event. They just went through a literal 1-in-a-million-year flood. So they're hurting over there. I think Houston recently passed Chicago too. It's the third biggest city in America. Like, people don't think of it, but Houston is big as shit. So there are a lot of people there, and they really, I mean, they weren't the people who were originally hit by the storm. So folks would say, oh, they should have left. It's like, not necessarily. They only were on the outer bands, and then the hurricane like stalled and then just kind of floated over them for a while, which was weird for a hurricane to do, just like not move, which is why they got all the rain dumped on them, which is why it's such a natural disaster. So do what you can. Luckily, our boy Ramses is fine. We'll probably get him on, if not this show. We might try and do like a Sunday post-fight UFC 215 show next Sunday after that UFC 215 card. We'll let you know next week. I think we're going to switch TMPs to Thursdays too. So programming note, TMPs Thursday, TMP post-fight shows after big shows on Sunday. Write it down. Mark your calendars. But yeah, we're all over the place. Give to charities, be humble. And God bless the people of fucking Houston. Moving on, what else do we have on the MMA docket? Try and get this podcast back on track. We got John Dodson. You mentioned this to me right before we started. John Dodson fighting Marlon Moraes at bantamweight. This is a very tasty fight. This is a John Dodson who might be the champion over at the flyweight division, if not for a guy named Mighty Mouse, fighting a very fearsome Marlon Moraes, who lost a very narrow UFC debut to Rafael Asuncion. He was on a 13-fight winning streak over a World Series of Fighting, just tearing everyone up. And this will be at UFC Fight Night 120, which already looks pretty stacked over in Norfolk, being headlined by Pettis and Dustin Poirier. Looking forward to it. Pat, thoughts on Dodson versus Moraes? Moraes? I always get his name wrong.
Yeah, I know. I go back and forth on the pronunciation myself. This is really just a top-tier scrap at 135 pounds, Dodson versus Moraes. That was a tough debut he had against Rafael Asuncion. Definitely, I thought that fight could have gone either way. It could have been a draw. That was a very tough fight. He was hanging in there with Asuncion, at least to my recollection. Dodson getting back on the winning track in his most recent fight against Eddie Wineland. And both of these guys typically just put on fun shows. Moraes has a great style. Dodson, his quickness, his power. He's truly one of the funnest 135-pounders to watch. Definitely very excited for it. And this whole card, the Fight Night 120, is shaping up to be quite stacked. So that should be a nice gem in the card, no matter where that one gets slotted.
Yeah, that should be a fun card. Today's card, I should say, significantly more shallow than that Norfolk UFC Fight Night 120 card. Kicking off in just a matter of hours, we're releasing this late night Friday, early morning Saturday, and just a few hours from now, you're going to have ONE FC kicking off at 7 a.m. Eastern. Ben Askren, the main event, should be fighting around 9 a.m. Eastern, and then sticking to Eastern at 8:45, your UFC Fight Pass prelims kickoff, and this whole card will be on UFC Fight Pass. The main card starts at, 3 p.m. Eastern, prelims kickoff at 11:45 a.m. Eastern, and then the main card kicks off at 3 p.m. Eastern. So a lot of Saturday morning, Saturday afternoon fights, no matter where you are on the East or West Coast. The main card is actually going to be a lot of fun. You have Brian Barberena, who is that tough as nails dude over from the MMA lab, who's got a lot of underdog wins on his record. He beat Sage Northcutt and Warley Alves back-to-back before losing a unanimous decision to the wrestler Colby Covington, then getting back on the saddle, beating Joe Proctor via first-round knockout, looking to fight Leon Edwards there in the first fight of the main card. You have Marion Renault against Talita Bernardo. This fight kind of historic because it'll be the first time a woman has ever fought in the UFC in her 40s. I guess Marion recently turned 40, and she will be the oldest female fighter ever to step in the octagon. Good for her, I guess. Chicks don't like to be called old, so I guess I don't know if she is pumped about that being a stat, but 40 isn't old. 40 is the new 30, especially if you know you're fucking in super shape, fighting in the UFC, beating chicks up. Who do we have on the co-main? We got CR Bahadurizadeh, who was off the map for a while. CR the Great, fighting out of Afghanistan, facing the Australian Rob Wilkinson. This actually underrated. This should be a fun fight. You have CR, who I guess had, like, what, 2 or 3 years there where he was not fighting. I think he fought John Howard late 2013 and then took a 2 or 3 year break before fighting Brandon Thatch last year. This will be his second fight since returning. Got that round 3 submission against Thatch. We'll see what he can do against Rob Wilkinson, who I think is making his UFC debut. I don't have any of his fights in front of me. I could be way off. But, yeah, what do you think of all these fights leading up to the main event, P-Money?
Well, for the hardcores, Jake, I think this is going to be a decent event. Really, even on the preliminary card, I think the featured bout Darren Till versus Bojan Velikovic, that one should be a very nice scrap. Darren Till, very exciting fighter from the UK, and Velikovic also very dynamic in his own right. Mirabek Taisimov versus Felipe Silva. I'm not familiar with Silva, but Mirabek Taisimov, definitely a talent. There's some good names on here. Rustam Habilov versus Desmond the Predator Green. Francimar Barroso versus Alexander Rakic. There's some good action going on. Tibau Guti versus Andrew Holbrook to kick off the event. Really not a bad lineup on the fight pass portion. And as you mentioned, you know, Leon Edwards, I want to say he's 4-1 in his last 5 in the UFC, taking on Brian Barberena. He's got some momentum in his own right, if I'm not mistaken, coming off of a TKO victory over Joe Proctor. And Marion Renault, always very tough. I want to say she's 1-1-1 in her last 3, a draw, a win, and a loss in that order. Last fighting against Betch Kohea, always very tough, taking on Talita Bernardo. Not familiar with Talita. I want to say she's debuting as well. So Marion very well could be in good shape here. And, of course, Sierra Bahadurzadeh, as you mentioned, Jake, only his second fight in, gosh, who knows how many years, because as you mentioned, he had a 2-year layoff. His last 2 fights, I want to say, were 2013 and then 2016, and that was March 2016. So, I mean, we're talking just a couple days away from a year and a half over from his last fight, which, as you mentioned, was the victory over Brandon Thatch. So will he be able to get that momentum going against the undefeated Rob Wilkinson? It'll be interesting to see, but a pretty good slate of action, I'd say, for tomorrow/today's card, depending on where and when you're listening.
For you gambling nerds out there, Leon Edwards putting Brian Barberena in the underdog spot again. Barberena +225. Rustam Khabilov -250. Who else we got? We got CR Bahadurzadeh, a slight favorite over Rob Wilkinson, who is making the undefeated Aussie making his UFC debut. CR -140. Marion, she is -290. Big favorite over Talita de Oliveira. And our main event is actually pretty close. Alexander Volkov, a slight favorite, but I think I'm going with the underdog here. Stefan Struve +110. Struve, you look at his record, you know, he's really, really going way back. I mean, almost going back a decade. Only has, I think, yeah, his entire UFC career is like 12-6 or something. That's pretty impressive when you consider the parity you see in the heavyweight division and losses to guys like Junior Dos Santos, Roy Nelson, Travis Brown, Mark Hunt, Alistair Overeem, most recently against Jared Rosholt. Those are all of his losses. In the meantime, gotten a lot of impressive wins against guys like Bigfoot Silva, against guys like Big Nog, guys like the current champion Stipe Miocic back in 2012. He is going up against Alexander Volkov, who's making, I guess this will be his 3rd fight in the UFC. He's won both challenges against Timothy Johnson, and earlier this year, I did unanimous decision against Roy Nelson. Was in Bellator a while, I believe was the Bellator champion briefly before losing it to Minnikov. And then I think he won the season 10 heavyweight final, but then never fought for the belt. Ended up leaving Bellator, coming back, but then joining M1, and then eventually coming to the UFC. So he's been all over the place. He's now has some stability, it seems like, for now at least, in the UFC. Going up against Stefan Struve, who is still young, you know, for as many fights as he has, the guy's still in his 20s. He's 29, 7 foot tall, and I really think he has made improvements in the last couple years, has looked a lot crisper standing up, and more importantly, his ground game has gotten deadly. I feel like he's able to grind this one out and win a decision against Alex Volkov. What do you see going down in the main event, P-Money?
Well, this is going to be a great fight, especially just in the sense that this is going to be one of the rare times where either guy has fought someone that's as close to as tall as they are. Because Volkov, in his own right, I want to say he's coming in at 6'7", or maybe even 6'8". And yeah, the former Bellator champion, he's riding a four fight win streak right now. And man, Stefan Struve, as you mentioned, he has been in the game for so long. He's been in the UFC active for over 8 years now, had lots of great fights and had lots of great victories. He's one of the few people to actually hold a victory over current UFC champion Stipe Miocic. And, man, it's going to be a great battle, him and Volkov both being so similarly built. I want to say Volkov may have an advantage standing. As you mentioned, though, Stefan Struve has seemingly shored up his striking game, definitely more known for his grappling skills, got a good ground game for someone of his dimensions. And, you know, this is going to be an interesting one, I think. And even though, as you mentioned, Stefan Struve has been in the game for so long, he's still young. Hopefully that will help negate some of the damage, because he definitely did take some of his damage early and often throughout his career. His fight with Paul Buentello, if anybody remembers it, that was a victory of his, but he lost 4 teeth in that fight. His first fight in the UFC, he was TKO'd by Junior Dos Santos. He's certainly taken his lumps, so I'm weary of that. Although, you know, again, hopefully the youth being on his side will help keep him fresh and help negate some of that damage. But in this one, man, it's a tough one. Vegas has it pretty close all the way across the board. It really is just a coin flip. I mean, both these guys are definitely top talents at heavyweight. And actually, Jake, now that I'm rambling on and on, I do recall that Stefan Struve, I do not have a worse history picking anybody's fights than Stefan Struve. I'm pretty sure I've guessed maybe one of his 18 fights correctly. So for this one, screw it, I'm going to say Struve wins. I think the experience will win out. And again, Struve, although he's always the taller man, he's got the experience. He's going to be fighting someone who's close to his frame, though. I don't know. It's going to be an interesting one, but I'm going with the young UFC veteran in this one.
The young UFC vet. And those are P-Money's picks. And as usual, that will round out the show. Thanks for tuning in. Tune in next week. We will be breaking down this card and, I guess, previewing an exciting UFC 215 card that'll be coming from Edmonton. A couple championships on the line. I think Mighty Mouse is going for the record 11 title defenses versus Ray Borg. Amanda Nunes looking to fight that rescheduled fight from UFC 213. Nunes, Shevchenko, too. A few other fun fights. Neil Magny, Rafael Dos Anjos. Iller Latifi versus Tyson Pedro, little heathen, taking on Gilbert Melendez. That's your whole main card. We'll be breaking that down. Also, going to try and get something new going. You know, it's oftentimes hard to arrange live call-ins, but what we could do, and I think what would make a lot of sense, is if I got this voicemail thing going, and if we could get the voicemail going, get people to call in, leave a voicemail, and and basically listen to your voicemails, whether they're about MMA or they're completely off topic. Listen to your voicemails, respond to them. I'm not sure exactly what number we'd be using for that right now. Probably just the standard call-in number, but follow us on Twitter, and I'll have some more concrete info for that next week. Next week's show, look for it Thursday night. I think other than that, though, Pat, you have anything for the people before we sign off?
Well, Jake, I think it's just important to echo the sentiments that you had put out there earlier regarding Houston, and certainly to give whatever you can. It's certainly a great cause. I mean, my goodness, you know, just a freak flood, freak hurricane. Definitely look up a good charity and give whatever you can.
That's right. You're a big boy and or girl. You can figure out a good one to give to. We love the shit out of you. We'll see you next week. Until then, we gone.